Robin, and this is Queer Lehigh Valley, where we talk about all things queer in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. I'm here today joined by Salem, and I'm so happy to have you. Can you tell the audience a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. Hi, I'm Salem. I am a student, an artist, a zine maker, and an activist living in the Lehigh Valley. And I am currently working towards my bachelor's degree in gender and sexuality studies.
Super cool. So we both really love talking about queer history stuff, which is where the idea for this episode came. Before we jump into the specific topic, we're going to dive a little bit more into the queer history of the YMCA, which I was not familiar with before talking to Salem. So I can't wait to learn more. You told me about the subject and I didn't Google it too much. So I'm excited to have some like live reacting to that. I'm curious if you remember the first time you learned about a moment or a person in queer history.
I mean, I feel like a lot of people's first moment that they learn about in queer history is the AIDS crisis. But I specifically got really brought into it through talking about and learning about the different types of protests that people would do during the AIDS crisis, whether that be with ACT UP, the art that was made in response by artists like Heath Herring, different protests like die-ins where people would be laying in the gravestones. It was the first time when I was researching history that I felt a really deep connection with it, even before I knew I was queer. And so I just, after that, I was like, I need to know everything.
I love that. That's so interesting. I think that for me, it was probably learning about the Stonewall riots. I was just thinking about that. I had a friend in high school who decided to write like their advanced placement history class paper on the Stonewall riots. And I remember being really like surprised that we hadn't covered it in class. And I only learned about it because, you know, my gay best friend was writing about it. And I remember that being a moment where I think that I started to understand how much history there was that wasn't necessarily making it into history classes. And then I feel like I always think back to that moment because I feel grateful again that, like, even though the class didn't cover it, like, my friend's curiosity about like our own history brought that to the surface for me.
Absolutely.
I appreciate you sharing too a little bit about like the impact that some of those specific moments learning about the AIDS crisis meant, because I feel like there's so much that happened in that time frame. I feel like I've never done learning about it.
Oh my goodness, always. I feel like I am always finding new art pieces that are done by different artists from that period. Like, it is music, everything. Like, there's I have so many books about it.
Do you have any like favorite artists or art pieces that come to mind from that time period?
Oh my goodness. There is one, I do not remember the specific artist, but it is a white box fan, and it's called Motherfuckers in parentheses. And it is very specifically like, it is the last thing that the artist's lover's family it left in the apartment after his lover died. And it is like one of the most emotionally impactful I've ever seen. And it's just a box fan. But yeah.
Yeah, I appreciate that there's a lot of artists who, in specifically addressing the AIDS crisis, played or continue to play with like mediums. Because I can think of, I also forget the artist's name, sadly. But there is an artist who did a piece that was the exact weight of his lover in Candy.
I think that we're talking about the same artist.
Yeah,
Because
yeah.
He did that one as well. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a pile of candy. And people are invited to take pieces. And then it slowly dwindles away, which is something definitely like haunting. And I think about that piece a lot. We're going to pivot a little bit to talking specifically about the history of the YMCA, which, again, I told you I'm not super familiar with, other than Every queer party I feel like I've ever been to does play that song. So that
course.
is like the extent of my knowledge of queerness and the YMCA. But when did you first learn about this topic and what makes it interesting or like made you gravitate towards it?
The first time that I learned about this topic, I found a YouTube video by a trans creator. I wrote down the name, Kaz Rowe. They have like a 45-minute YouTube video about it, and it was really interesting to me because I grew up going to the YMCA and like taking karate classes there, and that's where my dance class would perform, and like so many of my childhood memories are like doing summer camps at the YMCA. And so I thought it was really interesting to be like, oh, it's been gay the whole time. Was gay for an extensive period of time.
So, can you give us a little crash course about queer YMCA history for those of us uninformed?
Absolutely. So the YMCA used to be the Young Men's Christian Association, and it started in the 1840s. It specifically focused on an idea called muscular Christianity, where it believe
What
they
a
believe
name.
I know it's a little gay. They believed that young men were like soft and needed
Okay.
athletic competition with other men to develop positive character traits and be good Christians.
Okay.
And so, like, physical strength and moral character are very connected in the YMCA, at least at the beginning. And so they start in the 1840s. In the 1880s, they start using very homoerotic bodybuilding imagery
Okay.
to advertise to the young single men who want to go to like a boarding house and recreation center, especially because it was a lot of young rural men coming to the city for the first time, just like young single men living in boarding houses. But so a lot of these advertisements were muscular men in very little clothing or men wrestling each other. Like a little queer. And this was also fun fact, this is the first time that the term bodybuilding was ever used.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. But so young single men moving into the city would move into a YMCA and get guided into the city's queer scene. But very specifically, the YMCA bathhouses and swimming pools were very common spaces for gay men to cruise and hook up. Like, there were a lot of centers that actually catered to this community and were majority staffed by queer men that they would specifically try to cater to and exclude straight men to keep the peace in these areas so that it would just be like a bunch of gay men doing whatever they wanted. And I think it's really interesting because single sex spaces like this, like without women and without societal expectations, like during this time period, very often turned into spaces where men could explore the boundaries of their sexuality and their gender. Or it's like you also see it a lot with servicemen, specifically in the Navy. I'll bring up a little bit later, but a lot of the time they go and explore drag and would be talking about it openly and things like that. Like it's very common during this time period. But once we hit the 1940s and men from the Navy specifically were returning from war, it was a great opportunity for cheap lodging and short-term fun. So it became more well known as a gay male hookup space in the gay and straight community.
I
So this
see.
is when it gets a little bit more renowned for what's happening.
They broke containment.
It broke containment, exactly. It's like people using Clock It now. I hear straight people using Clock It all the time.
For people who don't know why that might be complicated, because listeners might not be familiar, could you break down a little bit about how language moves, because it sounds like you're familiar with it. You're talking about like the term of phrase clock it.
Oh yeah, absolutely. A lot of it usually will specifically be coming from like Black queer spaces. It starts Black queer spaces, generally shifts out to white queer spaces and then out to the general public. So a lot of the time it's like white queer people end up like are appropriating Black queer people, and then cishet people are now appropriating what was now generally queer pop culture. And I feel like it happens like with everything. Anything you but
For
yeah,
sure. I appreciate
absolutely.
you explaining that just because I don't know, all kinds of people listen to our show, and it's also just helpful for people to understand like some of the ways in which language moves. Because I've also heard some people say things like, oh, like that's like a Gen Z turn of phrase or something like that. When they're really referencing something that has come from Black queer culture or something adjacent.
Oh yeah, it a lot of it is specifically comes from like ballroom culture and vogue and like vogue culture. But yeah, we love language. Language is so fun.
Yeah, fascinating for sure. I am so fascinated by this information about the YMCA, but it does make a lot of sense. And I'm really also fascinated by that idea of like spaces that are often like segregated by sex, developing like a queer situation. Because I have read a little bit about people who were like settlers who were colonizing like the western part of what is now the United States. Especially people in like logging companies, it being really common that people would sometimes take on a role that's like more effeminate, and then other people take on a role that's like more masculine, but everybody identified as men. Sometimes there was even drag involved. And it was primarily in like those logging towns slash like settler communities, it was really common that there would not be many women. I think that that's a really interesting thing to point out in connection with the YMCA story.
Also with like gay cowboys, gay
Yeah, for
pirates.
sure. For sure.
So common.
Yeah. Yeah, the similar dynamics as to what I was talking about with the logging towns with the gay cowboy situation. I love that. So, we're going to take a short break and then we'll come back and keep diving into this. I'm your host, Robin, here today with Salem, talking about queer history and specifically the YMCA.
WDIY presents a selection of award-winning podcasts that air weeknights from 6 to 7 p.m. Listen to important conversations regarding art, science, business, health, and more here in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Check our website for new topics and archived programs. WDIY podcasts are on 88.1 FM, streaming at wdiy.org, on the app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi everyone, welcome back to Queer Lehigh Valley. I'm your host, Robin, here today with Salem, and we're talking about queer history, diving into a little bit about the history of the YMCA as it relates to specifically gay identities. I wanted to ask you if you had any favorite moments or like anecdotes that you read about when you were researching more about the queer history of the YMCA.
Oh my goodness. Okay, yes, I do. Very specifically with once straight people started to realize that this was such a hub for like gay community, specifically with the Navy servicemen, there were military stings where they would send in
Oh
investigators
no.
working as gay men
Yeah.
into YMCAs. They would have these men solicit the gay men for sex and then would turn them in after soliciting them.
Okay.
Then the person they solicited would get arrested, but the investigator would be fine.
Okay.
Weird fun fact. Also, again, a lot of the people that's like the upper management at the YMCA kept trying to discourage workers from allowing the activity to be happening. Since most of the workers at the locations were gay themselves, they just didn't listen and did what they
Yeah, of
wanted.
course.
They were like, well, this is our community, so bye.
I love that. And I am fascinated by the like trajectory of the organization and how like the introduction of knowledge about it into the mainstream impacted how people were relating to the space.
Oh, absolutely. Well, so There were a couple of different scandals in the early 1910s, a little bit smaller, that sort of raised some flags, but in general, people ignored it. A really big thing that happened was actually before the 1964 presidential election, Walter Jenkins, which was President Lyndon B. Johnson's closest aide, was arrested for hooking up with a man in a YMCA.
Whoa.
It was very specifically in a YMCA location.
Oh, wow.
It was like that was one of the main reasons why they started turning towards focusing on family recreational activities and sort of going away from the boarding house,
I see.
is because they were like both the YMCA started making these transitions to focusing on family, focusing on like the nuclear family specifically, as well as then. A lot of stuff was going on into the LGBTQ community. So, more LGBTQ specific spaces being opened that were like openly gay. So, like more bars were being opened that they were now demanding space in society. But yeah.
That's so fascinating. How do you feel like this relates to like broader trends or trajectories in LGBTQ plus history? I feel like we already touched on it a little bit with some of the, I don't know, phenomena in same-sex spaces, but I'd love to know what you think in terms of like how it relates to like broader trends.
I think that again, it was this because it was this like single sex space, it was a huge safe haven for these people to kind of explore themselves, explore both their sexuality and their gender. But because of both shifts in like political, like it always feels like in queer history, there will be points where we are allowed to sort of like bloom and flourish for a short period of time. And then there's generally lashback where like a lot of more puritanical Christian white supremacist ideas will start to come in. I feel like a lot of the time we'll be going through these ups and downs of like it was up, it went down a little bit, and then pre-AIDS crisis, it started to go back up a little bit and went back down with the AIDS crisis. And so, like, I feel like for gay men specifically, the public cruising culture has never returned to what it was
Yeah, for
previously.
sure.
Absolutely. Like, it, there is. Public, like any kind of cruising culture, I've like Hanky Code has started popping up a little bit again, but generally it's been pretty isolated. And so it's isolated to just like Grindr. But so yeah, I think it follows that trend of there being like a underground space that turns into more publicly seen space that then gets reacted negatively to and like backlash due to it becoming more public and being more open to. But also, we always recover and we always bounce back.
Yeah, that is really interesting though. I hadn't thought of it all like so clearly before, but that really is the trend. It is like there's some sort of like a cultivation of a space for queer folks. And then inevitably, through a series of things, I mean, I feel like something a little bit similar happened with gay bars. And I think that we're kind of going through a moment because a lot of them are shutting down. And I don't necessarily think it's their fault, but I think that they used to be a little bit more of a watering hole. And then now there's an interest in like not different spaces, but there's, I think that queer people have more spaces, which is great. At the same time, it can sometimes mean losing other ones. And then I also feel like gay bars have kind of had to try to work more than just the queer crowd, and that makes things complicated also. Like I said, I don't necessarily think it's their fault. I think it's kind of in line with a trend of, and then, you know, currently we're living through a lot of economic stress. And like a huge, I'm kind of referring to it as like a backlash to, I feel like maybe like 8 years ago, it really felt like things were like on the up for LGBTQ plus people at least. And I don't think if the version of myself that long ago, like I don't think I could have would have thought that things would go the way that they are. But now learning more about history and understanding about those waves, I feel like I'm like, ah, yes, this does make sense, unfortunately.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, a small, brief touchstone as another example, pre-Nazi Germany was very queer. Extremely. Like, they had that sexual institute of Agnes Hirschfeld's sexual institute, where they were doing so many transgender surgeries and studying people so much. And then again, we go down and then we come back up.
For sure. I'm just curious a little bit about this. Have you seen like modern YMCAs ever engage with this history? Because the thing that's so fascinating about when I hear like YMCA is like I definitely think of like senior aerobics class or like swimming pool. And like that's beautiful. I'm so glad that like those spaces are engaging with that. But I'm like, do you think that they know?
Most YMCAs, like the YMCA as a total, does not recognize this history due to its more explicit nature,
Yeah, that's so
because
fair.
they're focusing more on the family aspects, the re family recreation, children. A lot of their focus is now more towards a family unit. However, most YMCAs did recognize LGBTQ families as family units as early as 1992,
Oh,
way
okay, that's
before
like not bad.
it was legalized in the US. Yeah. So they really, like, they started recognizing them as family units at a pretty decent time. Not
Yeah,
horrible.
I was gonna say that's like not bad. I feel like, I mean, they were ahead of the government,
For
which
sure.
isn't much to be ahead of sometimes. But 90s is not bad. Go YMCAs. Why do you feel like this topic might not be that well known? Do you feel like it might be because of some of the like explicit slash, I don't know, spicy nature of some of it?
I think a lot of it is the more spicy nature. I feel like there's been a lot of watering down of our history, because so much of it has been tied to the more spicy things. Because for a very long time, that was one of the main ways that we'd be able to form
Yeah, for
connection.
sure.
And so I do feel like some of our history has been kind of watered down and made more family friendly, like, which is fine. But also I feel like real, like, if you're going into queer history, you have to recognize that it is very spicy, and it
Yeah,
is
sexuality is going to be all through it. Yeah.
duality is throughout it, and gender funkiness is throughout it. It's all, it's queer. It's a little different.
I'm just thinking back to other things that you had just said because I feel like a lot of information has been laid
Oh,
out
of
for
course.
me. I'm fascinated about the vice president because I feel like often whenever we talk about like people who are running for office, I'm usually like the first out person because I feel like we've had definitely queer people just like statistically. So I'm really fascinated that like I never learned about this specific vice president, whether or not he identified as gay. He was doing some gay things. So definitely fascinated by that.
I'm almost positive we had a gay president. James Buchanan
Oh
was
yeah,
the.
of Pennsylvania, right?
Yes. Yes, he was never married and he lived with a man and they had a child that they were taking care of. So.
And like I do get that like historians are doing a lot better right now. There are so many awesome, diverse historians who are like helping us review how we think about history. But I love how for like decades, like that was okay to be overlooked. I mean, sure, like I guess there are some straight explanations for that, but there are less than the gay ones, you know? Or even just like more expansive ways to think about things, because even if they didn't identify that way, like there's definitely queerness going on. So pivoting a little bit from our like subject of talking about the YMCA, I'm always like trying to talk to people about how you don't really need a history degree to be interested and care about history. I love history. I've always been really into it, especially queer history. And there's so much you can learn from like literally just reading books, or you can really check out archives too. Because of digitization, like so many archives are available. There's a trans archives project that's online, and I genuinely just love to open it up and like click on some things. I encourage people to do that. We also have a local queer archives, which you can make an appointment for and you can check out. It's at Muhlenberg College. So, what advice would you have for anybody who wants to learn more about queer history?
I would say start by finding a topic or like a time period, culture, religion, something that you enjoy, and then delve deep into it. Because queer people, we're everywhere. We've been everywhere. There's examples of queer and trans people from the very, very beginning. And so, like, whether you decide that you want to look into like art or music or like politics, anything, you will be able to find us. We've always been there and we always will be here.
I love that. And it's so true. I know that it's so funny because when I was in high school, people always told me Wikipedia is not a reliable source. But I will tell you, I kind of feel like it can be helpful for finding threads to pull. Like, I start so much of my, like, if there's a topic that I'm interested in that's like related to queer stuff. Currently, I'm working on a book that's about like queer ancestors, and I'm really trying to find people from all over the world. I literally was typing in like LGBTQ plus people Ireland, and like Wikipedia has like a timeline of like what LGBTQ plus rights looks like in a lot of countries, and you just like scroll down and the sources are there. And so, I mean, I think it's good to check the sources because it is like an open platform, but I find the source list to be really, really helpful to find like an aggregated place to see some places to start looking.
I say check your sources no matter what you're using.
Yeah, for sure.
Always, no matter what. But also, I feel like Wikipedia is a very easy and convenient place to start, and it's gonna be more accurate than some other internet things. So,
Yeah, don't ask AI about
don't ask
queer
AI about
history.
us, please.
Do you have any favorite books about queer history that you would recommend for people who are like, I don't even know where to start?
Yes, I do. Okay. I'm looking at my books right now. So I have A Queer History of the United States by Michael Bronski. Very good starting point, especially if we're just talking about the US. If you want to get more into theory, I do have Queer Theory and Introduction, as well as Queer Theory, Gender Theory by Ricky Wilching, I believe is how you pronounce it. A really fun one that I have is Be Gay, Do Crime, which was edited by Zane McNeil. Every single day of the year, it has a queer history moment that has happened. And it has at least one. Some of them have multiple events. But so for every day of the year, you get an event or like some kind of political like thing that we did. Finally, one that I really, really enjoy is It Was Vulgar and It Was Beautiful,
Oh, yeah.
specifically talking about protests and like where that was done during the AIDS crisis. I think it's a very beautiful look into and very emotional look into that time period. But those are some of my favorites for sure.
That's a great reading list to start, folks. But thank you so much for sharing. I'll tack on one of my favorites just to give people not too many. But I love the book. It's called Before We Were Trans, A New History of Gender by Kit Hayem. And I love it because it kind of delves into, like the actual experience of living as a gender outside of the one you were assigned at birth has happened forever. But the like specific category transgender is like a recent identifier for that experience. So the book really delves into like what are all the different ways in which cultures have talked about people who move away from the gender they were assigned at birth. And I really love their exploration of it. So if you're someone who's curious about that, that's also a great book. This has been a fabulous conversation. I really appreciate you taking the time to educate us a little bit on one topic in queer history and hopefully get some more folks interested in digging into their own histories and such. Do you have anything else you want to add before we head out for today?
No, just thank you so much for having me. I'm so glad that we were able to talk about some queer history. This was great.
Cool. Well, thanks for joining me today, Salem. This has been Queer Lehigh Valley. I'm your host, Robin, and hope to catch you next time.